The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network. www.theflypod.com.
From Studio 7, I'm your host, Alex Parnuk. Regardless of how you're listening, we're glad you have a few minutes. Take time to browse around our media site, theflypod.com. We have a nationwide network of show hosts, and we podcast a wide variety of programs daily to thousands of small communities across the United States, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. When it comes to media, we are what's next. My guest today is Erin Tuttle, a mom and a very vocal activist relating to our educational system. Erin has traveled from coast to coast and conducted lectures and Q&A sessions relating to this thing called Common Core. Erin, welcome to America Speaks Out.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, in 2002, George Bush signed the No Child Left Behind Act. It came up for revision in 2007, but nothing happened until December 10th, 2015. On that date, President Obama gave us the ESSA, or Every Student Succeeds Act. Erin, can you tell me about the process used to write and pass the ESSA?
Well, sure. It's unfortunate that it was done similar to the way other bills in Congress are being done. Very little transparency, and in a rushed manner. The Every Student Succeeds Act, ESSA, it is a combination of two separate bills, one in the House, which was the Student Success Act, and the other was in the Senate called the Every Child Achieves Act. So they blended those two together and came up with the Every Student Succeeds Act, ESSA. And when that happens, when you have a bill in the House and a bill in the Senate both doing the same thing, what they do is that they take those two bills and they put them into what is called a conference committee. And in the conference committee, they hash out the two bills and make one bill. And there were several problems with both the House bill and with the Senate bill. Unfortunately, when they put them together, I like to think of it like the creation of Frankenstein. And they just patched and blended things together and just really created a Frankenstein bill. They're claiming it's going to do a lot of things that it's not going to do. And the reason that the process was so bad on this one is that the monster Frankenstein bill that came out of the conference committee, it only came out 2 days before the House voted on it. So here we have a new bill that is 1,065 pages long, and members of the House are only given 2 days to read it. And I said it was a combination of two bills, but in the end, there was a lot of different things in it. It wasn't something that people were completely familiar with. They added a lot of things. They took out a lot of things. And it takes a very long time to go through a bill of that length to see what the implications are going to be. It passed the House, it passed the Senate, and Obama has signed it into law. And all of those things happened without any member of Congress really fully understanding what was in the bill. And as time has gone by since that point, people are realizing there were some things in the bill that maybe are going to be problematic in the future. And the implementation of that bill, I think it's really going to be a nightmare for schools, for students, and for teachers. There's just no way that anybody can read that bill in 2 days. I mean, unless that congressman is a speed reader, a world record speed reader, there's no way they can get through that bill in that amount of time. Additionally, they have to cross-reference it with other laws. And you know what I mean? There's a lot of figuring out of what the implications are of something even after you read it. So yeah, no one read the bill. I call it lazy and sloppy legislation.
Erin, when Common Core got pushed in on the American educational system, in the States we knew that it was private industry vis-a-vis Microsoft through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and their marshalling of the American Teachers Federation, the National Education Association, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that pushed through Common Core at the state level with the additional help of the U.S. Governors Association. So please tell me, who is supporting it, this ESSA, and is there anyone out there opposing it?
Well, the Heritage Foundation opposed the bill. Groups like Eagle Forum opposed the bill. All of the grassroots Common Core activists from across the country all opposed the bill. I know you're probably going to ask me, does it end Common Core? And we can get into that later. But I think it's very naive for people to assume that it's going to stop Common Core when the same exact groups that you've mentioned all support the bill. There's no way the National Governors Association, the Chief Counsel of State School Officers, Arne Duncan, the U.S. Department of Ed, all of these groups who have had a heavy fist in making sure that Common Core was adopted and implemented in the schools. So how is it that this bill ends Common Core and they're all supporting it? That's so naive. So if you look at who's supporting it, it's hard to think that it's going to do what the authors, both Republican and Democrat, are claiming it will do.
That being the case, Aaron, can you educate us a bit as to how this ESSA is different and how it has changed from the No Child Left Behind? Just a couple of short examples.
Well, even overall, the talking points are that this bill is going to lessen the amount of federal control over the schools. It's going to free the states. This bill is going to return the power over education back to the states. The original No Child Left Behind bill was about 600 pages long. This bill is 1,065 pages long. It has more funding than did NCLB. So there's going to be more money appropriated for these federal education programs. So it doesn't take more money and a longer bill to do less. This bill does not do less. This bill will do more as far as the federal role over the programs in schools. There are some things that are the same. The testing requirements are the same. Kids in grades 3 through 8 and once in high school will be tested in math, English, and science. One thing that is different about this bill that is worse than NCLB, if you think back to when states were forced into adopting Common Core, the U.S. Department of Education couldn't do it through NCLB. So what they did is they had to have a waiver. We will excuse you from these particular onerous requirements of No Child Left Behind. And in exchange for that, you have to adopt Common Core assessments, make changes to your teacher evaluations and your school accountability, all of those things. So the language was written pretty tightly as far as the original NCLB went. It was written in a way that the secretary couldn't force states to adopt certain standards or force an alignment of their standards without using the waiver. Well, the new bill actually has an alignment criteria. NCLB did not. And the alignment criteria states that every state, when they submit their plan to be approved to receive federal funding, it's called a state plan, and when they submit it to the secretary, they have to show how their new standards are going to have a certain alignment criteria. The alignment criteria is the same alignment criteria that was used in the waivers to get states to adopt Common Core. What once the secretary had to have a waiver to force, he doesn't need a waiver anymore. It's actually dictated by the statute itself, and it's an alignment to college and career readiness. And so for that reason, NCLB was a better bill than is ESSA. On the other hand, there's no more AYP requirements. So schools, how that was the big uproar that NCLB was going to require states to have 100% proficiency by the 2014 school year. Well, that is no longer in the bill, which is a good thing. So that's about the only good thing in the bill. But the funny thing is that with the waivers, no one's been operating under AYP since about 2011. So it's not like it's something that schools were currently operating under, but it is something different from NCLB to ESSA.
Can you expand on the AYP just for the listeners?
Sure. So AYP stands for Annual Yearly Progress. And a condition of No Child Left Behind was that so you have to give an assessment every year. And when NCLB started in 2002, they said, okay, we're going to start you at this target in 2002. And over the years, we want you to move the percent of students who score proficient on the state assessments to move up on these targets. You had to make annual yearly progress towards meeting a proficiency requirement. So by 2014, it was supposed to be 100% proficiency, which is unrealistic, obviously. And there were ways of getting around that. Like this new bill, they could have just gotten rid of that, but they didn't have to change everything about it, right? These are little fixes could have been done along the way to relieve that pressure from states, but that's just not what they did. under the ESSA, there still are targets and there still are proficiency requirements. There's still reporting requirements for different subgroups like minorities and lower economic socio groups. So all those things are still the same. They're just not going to have the same targets as they did under NCLB.
Doesn't undo Common Core?
No, it's not going to undo Common Core. You know, I went out to Washington, D.C. On the behalf of many of the anti-Common Core groups to argue against passage of the bill. I was there right before the bill passed, and I spent a lot of time on the Hill. I talked to a lot of members of Congress. A lot of them could understand that this bill was not a, you know, move in the right direction. Actually, 60 Republicans in the House voted against it. Only 40 of them had voted against the Student Success Act, you know, the House version I talked about earlier. So more Republicans changed their vote to be against ESSA. It's interesting because I went out and I met with probably 30 different members of Congress. And the one member that did not have time to meet with me was my own. There wasn't 5 minutes that she could give me before the vote. So it's not going to undo Common Core. It's difficult without getting really weedy and technical, which I won't do to you today. But there's just language included in it that will keep it. It's basically embedded into the statute in a couple of different places. And it gives the secretary control. There's a lot of people saying, oh, the secretary will be prohibited from, you know, meddling with states' education systems. Well, the secretary still has the right to approve or disapprove your state plan. If he disapproves your state plan, you either make the changes he wants or you don't get to participate in the program, which would mean the loss of hundreds of millions of dollars to state departments of ed. So he still has the same amount of control as he did under NCLB. They'll say, oh, well, we had a new provision in there that says that the secretary is prohibited from influencing standards or telling the states which standards to have. And I said, yes, it is. But guess what? It was also in NCLB. And that didn't stop him then. So the idea that, you know, the prohibitions will do something today that they were unable to do in the past makes the idea that it's going to stop this federal intervention very unlikely.
I kind of did some research and like to respond to a press release I found in which five statements as to the ESSA. In a real quick yes or no on these statements, I'll read them. Every Student Succeeds Act would, number one, end Common Core mandate. Yes or no?
No.
And the need for federal waivers.
Well, he won't need the waivers anymore because it's in the statute now. No, he won't. He won't need waivers anymore, but it's not to our advantage.
And federal test-based accountability?
Absolutely not.
And national school boards?
We don't have national school boards, but yeah, okay.
Allow states to decide important measures in their accountability standards.
States are allowed to decide some factors in their accountability system, but they still have to include the federal ones as well. So over half of the school accountability measures are based on test scores.
And now, last question, Aaron. Who stands to win from this legislation and who lost? Who would be the loser? We know what happened with the old legislation, No Child Left Behind, because of how we talked about it in the beginning. But as far as this specific ESSA goes, who stands to win and who stands to lose?
The groups that stand to win the absolute most are the testing companies. There is no doubt. They always come out the winners, whether it's at the federal level or in state legislation. They always, always win. All of the testing mandates at NCLB are still here. So that's one thing. And there was a movement in the House version of the bill that would have allowed parents to opt their children out of the testing and the state not be penalized for that. There was a penalty in NCLB that if you didn't test 95% of students, then the school would not make AYP. So that was the big problem, right, where you have schools forcing parents, all of those scenes that you see playing out on the news and parents protesting and holding their kids back from school. Anyway, well, this new state accountability system that he mentions, it has a requirement that we include now in our state accountability system a measure of whether or not a school has tested 95% of their students. So it's not a lot of freedom for the state to create their own accountability system when they have to have over half of it based on test scores and inclusion of this 95% participation rate. There's just a little room for schools to put in non-academic factors, which a lot of people are opposed to. It's difficult to say, whether or not a student is getting what a student needs when the school gets to use accountability measures like student engagement or teacher satisfaction, you know, all of these very non-academic indicators that will boost their score one way or the other. It's a difficult thing because you don't want the teach to the test mentality where everything's based on a test score. But I think that there needs to be a lot of test-based accountability, but without the harsh punishments as we had in the past. You know, we need accountability, but we need to make it so it's not so punitive so that we don't get the teach to the test mentality. There's a balance there, and this bill didn't make it.
Aaron, I'd like to thank you for coming on my show today. I would also like to point out that any American citizen is welcome to come on future episodes of America Speaks Out and express their own opinions and ideas about today's topics. The FlyPod Network is a neutral forum, so regardless of your point of view or your political affiliation, it makes no difference to us. So if you'd like to come on the show, contact us by email right here in the studio, shout@theflypod.com. That's my show for today from Studio 7. I'm your host, Alex Parnuk, coming to you free and clear through the New Media Network program feeds of theflypod.com. Until next time, so long.